mine, showing her. She laughs, rolling her eyes. Ew.
You guys?
Another girl chides her friends, but they don't stop laughing.
What's that?
Shannon points to the bulge in the pocket of my skirt.
My heart sinks a little. No one else in my class has an inhaler, and now it makes me even more different.
It's just my inhaler, I reply, speaking low. I have allergies and asthma and stuff. It's no big deal. I keep my eyes down because I don't want to see the looks they give each other. I twist my lips to the side, feeling tears creep up. Why can't I be cool?
So, do you think Corey Schultz is cute?
Shannon speaks up. I blink, my guard going up. No, I answer quickly. Corey Schultz is in our class, and he's really cute, but I don't want anyone to know I think that.
Well, I think he's cute, she says.
We all do. You got a problem with him? I look up, shaking my head.
No, I just... Yeah, I guess he's kind of cute.
A girl behind Shannon breaks into laughter, and Shannon suddenly walks away toward the basketball court. My heart starts racing. She walks up to Corey and whispers something in his ear, and he turns to look at me, scrunching up his face in disgust.
No.
Everyone starts laughing, and I turn and run away, hearing behind me, Ryan likes Corey, Ryan likes Corey. I start crying, tears streaming down my face and shaking with sobs. I run behind the wall of the building and hide myself as I break down.
What's wrong with you now?
My sister, who's in fifth grade, asks as she charges over to my side. She must have seen me running away.
Nothing, I cry. Just go.
She growls under her breath, sounding mad at me.
Just find some friends so I can play with mine and Mom stops making me play with you. Can't you do that?
I cry harder as she storms away. She's embarrassed by me. I don't know what's wrong with me. I dry my tears and walk to my classroom. I'm sure my face is all red, but I can just hide behind my folders and put my head down on my desk. I quietly step into the classroom, seeing a few students sitting at their desks who wanted to get work on their projects done, while Ms. Wilkins sits at her computer with her back to me. I slide into my desk and take out two folders, standing them up to make a fence around me. I put my head down and hide.
Want to help me?
A voice says. I look to my right and see Delilah working on a piece of butcher paper on the floor. She holds out a marker, her fingernails dirty and her blonde bangs hanging in her eyes. She always stays in for recess. Unlike me, she stopped trying to fit in a long time ago. I take the marker, coming down to the floor with her.
Thanks,
I say, looking at her hand-drawn Eiffel Tower that's almost as tall as me. She smiles, and we begin working, coloring it in as the weight starts to lift from my chest. She's always nice. Why do I care so much what the other girls think? Why do I want to be friends with them? I try to be nice, but it's never good enough. But they're mean and everyone loves them. Why is that? I bend over in the shower stall, resting my hands on my knees and pushing the memory away. That's not me anymore. I'm fine. I've got this. He pushed, they laughed, and I choked. I got complacent. I just have to push back next time. I'm good at that. Or just ignore him. This was no big deal anyway. None of these people will be a big deal in a couple months. Damn Twilight. How could he possibly have guessed that? I breathe in and out, my muscles finally relaxing. Mason Laurent is consistently a step ahead. I slip the inhaler back into my pocket, shut off the water, and exit the stall, leaving the locker room. I'm late for math, but I push forward and act like the episode in English never happened. No one's talking about it. No one's texting about it. Mason Laurent is still far off anyone's radar, and no one believes I'm the superficial brat he's making me out to be. Absolutely no one. The rest of the school day passes mercilessly slow as I brave lunch and every single class, feeling like another shoe is going to drop at any second. But as soon as the final bell rings, I drop off my books at my locker and grab my duffel for cheer and swim, hurrying out of the school and to the side parking lot.
Ryan!
I hear Lila yell behind me. But I just keep going. I'll be back, I call over my shoulder. She knows we have practice and is probably wondering why I'm leaving the school. Making my way through the parking lot, seeing students piling into cars and hearing engines fire up, I scan the crowd for the new guy. I finally see him, stepping up to a black truck and not carrying a single thing. No books, no folders, nothing. As I walk toward him, I notice a couple of guys greeting him while my friend Caitlin approaches him, coyly grazing her hand along the side of his truck and acting all shy and shit. My hopes are dashed. He's definitely on people's radar. I hesitate, watching her hug her books and talk, giggling at something she said while he stares down at her, calm and cool, looking no friendlier than he did with me. Why does that please me? I guess it's a relief to know that maybe I'm not special. He's rude to everyone, except the guys who came up to him just a moment ago. Or maybe I wouldn't have liked seeing him smile at her and not at me, or... I take in a deep breath, growing impatient. I don't want her to see me talking to him, but I need that notebook. I walk over to them, tipping my chin up and nodding once at Caitlin. I'll see you at practice. She pauses, looking taken aback. I hold the strap of my duffel hanging on my shoulder and stare at her, waiting for her to leave. She eventually gives a little eye roll and walks off, leaving us alone. No doubt to tattle to Lila. I dig in the pocket of my bag, pulling out the locket and handing it to him. He takes the necklace, almost gently, and stares at it a moment before stuffing it into his pocket. He raises his eyes to me, and something gives. For a split second, I see something different. Like he's disappointed or something. Now give me the book, I demand. Sorry, he says, holding my eyes. I'm afraid I don't have it. Don't piss me off, I growl in a hushed tone. I got what you wanted. What I want. He laughs quietly to himself as if there's something I don't understand. He opens the driver's side door and climbs into his truck, but before he can close the door, I reach out and grab it. We had a deal. He nods. We did. But right now, I'd love nothing better than to piss you off. And he yanks the door out of my hand, slamming it shut. Starting it up, he steps on the gas, and I run my hand through my hair, despair curling its way through me. But I hesitate only a moment before I drop my bag and race up to him, jumping up on the cab step. You asshole! I bite out, and he slams on the brakes and glares at me. I'm probably attracting attention, but I'm not taking any more of his shit. Get off the truck. I shake my head. I don't know who you are or where you come from, I snarl, but I don't get pushed around, in case you haven't heard. He jerks his chin, indicating something behind me as he smiles. I guess we'll see. I turn and see Lila and Caitlin sitting on the ledge at the top of the steps, watching us. Great. How am I going to explain this? Watch out, you're being judged, Mason taunts. Don't choke. I step down from the cab, and he puts the truck in gear again. But before he can take off, I call out, You're living in an abandoned theme park. He stops the car again and lifts his chin. I stroll up to his window, feeling a bit of my power return as I give him a small smile. I'd only be doing the compassionate thing, I tell him, letting a responsible adult know about your homeless situation. He stills at my threat, and I offer a sympathetic sigh. Social services would come in, find out where you come from, and if anyone's looking for you. I go on, putting my finger on my chin in mock contemplation. I wonder if Mason Laurent has a criminal record. Maybe that's why you're hiding out. You definitely want to stay invisible. I'd bet money on that. His scowl is hot, and I can see his jaw flex. Yeah, he might be 18 and perfectly able to squat wherever he likes, but that doesn't mean he's up for any attention either. Maybe his parents are looking for him. Maybe a foster family. Maybe the police. Not many kids transfer schools 6 weeks before the end of their senior year, after all. He's running from something. He shifts the gears again and finally speaks. I'll bring it tonight. You'll bring it now. He turns to look at me. If you have me picked up, you'll never get it back. He points out. I got shit to do. I'll see you tonight.
Chapter 5. Misha. Dear Ryan, I hold the pen over the paper frozen. The millions of things I want to say to her every day lost once I sit down to write. What did she always tell me? Just start. Don't worry about what I'm going to say, just start and everything will open up. I couldn't write lyrics before Ryan, and now... Since that night 3 months ago, I can't write anything. I stare out into the empty warehouse. Black soot from past bonfires coating the walls and the warm breeze whipping through the broken windows and hitting my back. A chain hanging somewhere in the vast space above me blows in the gust and bangs against a rafter while a shiver creeps up my spine. It feels different here. At night, this place is packed, but during the day, it's quiet and empty. My favorite place to come when I need just that. I stare down at her name, trying to remember how easy it was to always open up to her. I hate this, I tell her. Everything fucking hurts. They weren't supposed to bury her. I shouldn't have let him. She saw a movie when she was a kid about a woman buried alive, and it scared the shit out of her. She didn't want to go underground. But my father said we needed a place to visit her, as if her wishes weren't the most important thing. I close my eyes, wetness coating the rims of my lids. Anger churns inside me, and it flows down my arms as I carve the words into the paper. I can't write you. And when I can, I can't send the goddamn letters. I want to hurt you. I don't know why. Probably because you're the only person I have left to hurt. Every letter you send that I don't answer is the only thing that makes me feel good anymore. You want the truth? That's it. It feels good to play with you like this. It gives me pleasure knowing you're thinking about me, but wondering if I'm thinking about you. I'm not. I never do. I keep writing, letting every ugly thing spill out because she loves me, she wants me to be happy, and she wants me to smile and do mundane shit like talk about Star Wars and music and what I'm doing for college. Who the hell is she to assume there aren't more important things than her going on in the world? All your letters, over all the years, immediately went into the garbage after I read them. Didn't you see how pathetic you looked? Sending 5 letters for every one of mine. I'll bet you deluded yourself, too. Did you fantasize I kept them, maybe with a little red bow tied neatly around the stacks as I jerk off to them because I love your pretty words so much? No. Because after I eventually fucked you, I'd get bored. That's all it was about. I draw in the air through my nose, locking my jaw together as I press the pen into the paper. Guilt creeps in. Ryan, the liar, the poser, the superficial bitch who's no different than all the others. But then I drop my eyes, remembering Ryan, the kid who slipped 5 bucks in a letter in 5th grade when I told her my dad took away my allowance. The girl who makes me smile when she argues about how sausage overpowers the taste of pizza and sent me a veggie lover's pie for my birthday to prove me wrong. She didn't. Meat lovers is way better. The girl who gets all my movie references, knows when something's wrong, tells me everything I need to hear, and stops the world from spinning around me. Ryan. The beautiful, perfect girl who's so different from all the others. I run my hand over my forehead and through my hair, my throat tightening into a knot and my eyes burning. Fuck. I put the pen to the paper and scrawl what my goddamn heart can only whisper. I miss you every day, I write. You're my favorite place. And then I drop the pen and tear the paper out of my notebook. I dig a matchbook out of my jeans, the one I use for lighting my lamp in my room at the Cove, and strike a match, watching as the tip glows orange and yellow. I bring it up to the letter, setting the corner on fire. Quickly, the edges burn black as the flame spreads across the paper, eating every single word as the blue lines slowly disappear. I let out a sigh, pulling my lip ring in between my teeth. The girl I saw yesterday in the classroom, she disappointed me. My Ryan, the one I thought I knew, would never treat someone the way she treated that kid Cortez, the way she just stood by and let that cocksucker mess with him. I waited for her. I sat there and waited for her to stand her ass up and speak up for him. To say something, to do anything, but nothing. Everything makes sense now. The cheerleader she talked about in her letters and everything she hated, she was talking about herself. I drop the small fire in my hand to the cement floor and stand up, grinding my shoe into the dust, stamping it out. I look at my watch and see it's after 7. I'd stopped by my house after school before my dad got home to check my mail and pick up some things. And then I grabbed some food and came here. I remember Ryan saying in her letters that she teaches swim lessons Tuesday through Thursday nights at the school's pool. That's where I'll probably find her now. I should have just given her the book back. She'd found Annie's locket, and I don't want to start any shit with her, especially when she's not the reason I'm here and I'm skipping town as soon as I get what I came for. And she and I will never have to cross paths again. But I have to admit, fucking with her in class today was the first time I've smiled in a while. It's hard to resist. I walk out of the warehouse to my truck and climb in the cab, slamming the door. But then I see the passenger side door swing open and I jerk, startled. Dane hops in the truck and shoots me an easy smile as he sits back, looking at ease. Netflix and chill? I scoff and turn my keys in the ignition. Get out. The engine rumbles to life with a smooth purr that I've worked hard to maintain. My cousin left me this truck when he was indisposed for 3 years, but now that he's around, he hasn't come to claim it, so I guess it's mine. I was grateful when he passed the keys to me all those years ago. I hadn't wanted to ask my dad for a car when the time came. So, I had this date last night. Dane goes on, ignoring my order. Do you remember that girl from Sigma, Kappa, whatever? She was at the gig last night and everything was going great, both of us eye-fucking for like 4 frickin' hours. He pauses and turns to me, his voice becoming urgent. She takes me home, dude, and I'm sitting in the living room while she's in the bathroom and I'm so ready because she's so hot, right? And who walks in? Dane. I close my eyes, willing him to shut the fuck up. Her mom, dude. He bursts out. Her mom in her light pink nightie with legs for days. And let me tell you, man, Stacy's mom has got it going on. I can't help myself. I break out in a laugh at the song reference and pinch the bridge of my nose, tired but a fraction more relaxed. Even if I'd never admit it to him. Such an idiot. Dane is 21, but he never quite figured himself out after high school. He still lives in his parents' house, loves to make music, but he's in no hurry to be someone by a certain age. I wish I could let things go as easily as he does. I let out a calm breath and look over at him, guilty that he's still a good friend, and I've been a shitty one lately. I'm sorry about the band. After Annie died, I couldn't see anything beyond that. I started skipping school. I left the band. I stopped trying to have a relationship with my dad. He was destroyed, losing Annie, and I went through the motions for a couple months, sticking around, but we couldn't mourn together, and I couldn't stay to watch. He was sad. I was angry. Losing her only broke whatever small link we had to each other. And my piece of shit mother never even showed up to the funeral. Every day I think about it, I get more livid. But Dane just shrugs. We're killing time until you're ready to come back, he tells me. You know we're not shit without you. Yeah, well, I haven't written in months. It's gone, so don't wait for me. After I left the band, the guys all stepped in and carried on with 3 people. They still perform here and there, and the summer tour is still on. I know Dane is hoping I'll be back on track by then, but I have zero interest. When I lost Annie, I lost Ryan, too, and now nothing is speaking to me. I don't know if I'll ever have anything to write or anything more to say. What's this? I cast a glance over at Dane, who holds Ryan's white notebook, fanning the pages as he looks inside. Are you writing after all? He asks, but then stops on a page. Nope. This is a girl's writing. He continues to read and then lets out a little laugh. A very bad girl's writing. Who is she? I snatch the notebook away from him and drop it to the seat. My muse. Does she want it back? I smile to myself. More than anything. And he grabs his seatbelt, fastening it. Well, then let's go. Walking into the school, I hear the distant hum of a vacuum cleaner, probably coming from the library, since that's the only room that I've noticed in the school with carpeting. I cast a look left. A janitor must be in there. I'm not sure how many there are, but there has to be more than one with a school this size. My school, Thunder Bay Prep, is a bit smaller, but in many ways a lot nicer. Falcon's Well has almost no security. I glance up at the cameras that are being installed but are not yet active, and the athletics here suck. The hallways are dark. Classroom doors are closed, and since we noticed the parking lot was nearly empty on the way in, that means the lacrosse, cheer, and track practices must be done for the night. Maybe a few teachers are lurking on the second and third levels, but other than the janitors, only Ryan is left, teaching down in the pool. I walk up to the front office doors, glancing around me to make sure we're alone, and hand the notebook to Dane. Hold this. What are we doing? He pulls up the hood on his black sweatshirt, nervously looking up at one of the dead cameras. I slip out a tension wrench from my jeans pocket and immediately dig back in, feeling for the paper clip I swiped off a page in Ryan's notebook. I unwind the clip and straighten it, bending the end just slightly. Dane watches as I insert the wrench, applying pressure and feeling which way has more give, before sticking the paper clip into the lock and working the pins, pressing all five of them up until they click. I add pressure to the wrench and then click. The lock turns and the door opens. Where'd you learn that? He whispers, sounding surprised. YouTube, stop talking. We both dive into the dark office, quickly scanning the area to make sure it's empty. The desks behind the counter sit vacant, and I shoot my eyes left, seeing Mrs. Burroughs written on a door. I walk over and jiggle the handle, finding it locked as well. Inserting the wrench, I work quickly and feel relief when the handle finally gives way, the door opening wide. I stare into the office, amazed that this actually worked. I've never picked a lock before, until I Googled how this afternoon and practiced on some rusty old doors at the Cove. The principal's office. Dane inches in, filling the doorway with me. I spent a lot of time in one of these. I think they gave me my diploma just to get rid of me. His voice is thick with humor, and I stuff the tools back in my pocket. Shh. Stepping inside, I immediately go for the cabinets and begin opening drawers, looking for anything even close to resembling what I'm searching for. I sift through student files, budgets, receipts, teacher records, disciplinary records. What are you looking for? I open drawer after drawer, dragging my fingers over the files as I quickly scan. It has to be here. Annie told me once she mailed the stuff here. Dude, we should get out of here. Dane urges, sounding nervous. And then, I see it. A thick, brown pocket folder labeled private with a rubber band around it. I grab it, quickly opening it and peeking inside. It's filled with pink envelopes and a small photo album, and an ache shudders through my chest as I force down the lump in my throat. Annie. I close the folder and wrap the rubber band around it again, shutting the drawers and walking out of the office. There are people still in the building, and I don't want to get caught. Dane following in my wake as I turn around and push the button, locking and closing the door behind us. Unfortunately, the double doors in front are locked with keys, so I can't cover my tracks on those. Hopefully, the office staff will just think they forgot to lock them on their way out this afternoon. Dane looks down at the folder in my hand. What does this have to do with the notebook? He holds up Ryan's diary. Nothing. I walk down the hallway toward the locker rooms at the back of the school, taking the book out of his hand. Not a damn thing. Ryan isn't why I'm in Falcon's Well, but I knew I would run into her here. Something I feared. She doesn't deserve my attention. Annie's all that matters, but after months of not giving a shit about anything, my family, friends, or music, having Ryan close is kind of distracting, in an almost pleasant way. It doesn't matter, though. I have the file, and as soon as I have what else I came here to collect, I'm gone. I earned enough credits to graduate in January, and I'm not going back home. I'm taking my fake name and my fake ID, and I'm going to try to forget. Forget that I was taking selfies with Ryan that night, ignoring my instincts and responsibilities, while my sister was dying alone on a dark, cold road. We walk into the locker room, knowing that the pool is accessible from it. Passing by the offices and through the locker bay, I see something out of the corner of my eye and catch a glimpse of two bodies in the shower. I enter the hallway and slow to a stop. Did I just see? I jerk my chin at Dane and point ahead. There's a pool through there. Give me a sec. He nods lazily and heads out of the locker room. I turn around again and, keeping my body close to the wall, I peer carefully around the corner again. Amusement pulls at the corners of my mouth. Well, it looks like not everyone in Cheer and Lacrosse has gone home for the night after all. Trey Burrows, the guy who thinks Ryan is his, stands in the shower, holding her best friend, Lila, is it? Up against the bathroom wall, both of them, naked, wet, and fucking as the showers spray around them. Classic. Lila's dark hair is up in a wet ponytail, and her arms and legs are wrapped around him, holding on tight while he grips her ass and goes at her, both of them breathing hard and moaning quietly. This is the guy Ryan wants to take her to prom? She chooses her dates about as well as her friends. I wonder how long they've been screwing behind her back, but hopefully, if he's fucking this girl, then he might not be getting it from Ryan. An ounce of pleasure hits me. I turn around and walk down the hallway again, pushing through the locker door and seeing the impressive 10-lane indoor pool. Parents sit on the bleachers, observing and taking pictures while Dane leans against the wall. I walk over and stand next to him, following his gaze. Ryan stands in the pool with four students, all kids, probably younger than 10, and moves her arms in big circles as she dips her face in the water. The students count. 1, 2, 3, breathe! They scream, and Ryan twists her head to the side, taking a breath before dipping it back in. She circles her arms again, pretending to push herself through the water, doing three strokes as they count. 1, 2, 3, breathe. She lifts her head up and stands up straight as she pushes her hair back off her forehead. Okay, now your turn. All the kids begin mimicking her as she counts. And I just watch her. She lets out a big smile, clearly proud as they all fall into sync, completing their strokes and breathing when they should, and I have to fight not to laugh when one of the boys splashes her accidentally. She feigns a growl and splashes him back. All right, again, she shouts. 1, 2, and then she stops, her eyes falling on me. They narrow and I hold her gaze, recognizing the temper flaring as her smile falls. Again! She bites out at the kids, her eyes dropping to my hand with the notebook. That water looks cold, Dane comments, a quiet laugh following, and I know what he's referring to. I let my eyes fall to her breasts, seeing the hard points of her nipples straining against her long-sleeved black rash guard. A pretty impressive feat considering the wet material is clinging to her skin, and I can see that she's also wearing a bikini top under the shirt, adding extra padding, which I'm grateful for. I look up at the bleachers, seeing a few dads gazing down, and while they're probably looking at their kids, I don't like that they might be looking at her. She doesn't need to give them a show. I drop my eyes back to her, watching her smile at the kids. Great job, everyone! She walks down the line, giving them high fives before standing in front of the last one, asking, Washing machine or cannonball? Washing machine! The little girl with freckles squeals. Ryan picks her up, cradles her in her arms, and twirls in the pool, whipping left and then whipping right as the kid squeezes her eyes shut and laughs. Shoo, 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 Ryan says, mimicking a washing machine sound. I shift and draw in a breath, realizing I'd forgotten to breathe for a moment. Me! Me! The next kid waves his hand in the air and shouts, Cannonball! Ryan picks him up. This kid, she vaults into the air and he flies a couple feet above the water and then plunges below the surface, making a big splash. I tear my eyes away, reminding myself that I don't care. I stand with Dane and wait for her to finish all the kids. And as soon as she dismisses them to their parents, I walk over to the bench where she's drying herself off. And here I thought you ate children, I muse, handing her the notebook. She throws her towel down and takes the book, immediately opening it and scanning the inside. Well, I do like to play with my food a bit before I eat it. She fans the diary, probably looking to see if anything is missing. I didn't tear out any pages, I assure her. How do I know you didn't make copies? Because I don't play with my food before I eat it. Dane clears his throat at my side, speaking low. I'm going to wait in the parking lot. Take your time. He follows the parents and their kids out of the gym through the side door. Ryan stuffs the diary in her bag and picks up the towel, continuing to dry off her legs. Her black bikini bottom, unlike her rash guard, is not as conservative as I would like. Her toned legs look tight and smooth, and the droplets of water on her thighs have my heart skipping a beat. She realizes I'm still here and scowls. Well, she snaps. You can leave now. I slide my hands into my pocket. And why would I do that, Rox? When it's so warm in your presence. Why do you keep calling me Rox? I ignore the question, keeping my eyes locked on hers. But then I notice her shiver, and without thinking, I glance down, seeing that her nipples are harder than ever. She's obviously cold, and visions of her in a hot shower invade my head. Naked. Steam. Heat. Wait. Shower. I glance behind me at the men's locker room door. Her friend and that fuckwad could still be in there. What if she hears something or sees them come out together? I turn back to her. So what? She should find out what goddamn sleazes those people are whose opinion she cares so much about. She should find out exactly what a bad investment that was. She has this coming. But for some reason, I don't want her to confront that. Not unprepared. If she sees her prom date and best friend together, no one will take her side when the fallout happens. No one will probably be surprised by Lila's behavior, and Trey will be the man. Ryan will just be the stupid girl who was duped. And I'm not sure why I care. Come on, I say. It's dark out. I'll walk you out.
Piss off.
She pulls on some shorts, tying the little string, and then slaps on a baseball cap, not even sparing me a glance. There's someone breaking into the school at night. I point out, my voice turning angry. You shouldn't be here alone. She laughs, leaning down to zip up her bag.
Yeah, maybe it's you, and you just want me out of here so you can get going on writing stupid crap on the walls.
I hesitate. Okay, yeah, I've broken into the school a couple of times. She's right about that. But I'm not the one breaking in and vandalizing the place. That is definitely not me. I didn't risk coming here to get caught doing stupid shit. She straightens and turns to fix me with a look.
You called me a cunt and cut my hair. You think I'd actually trust you to protect me? Don't blink too hard, shit for brains. You might lose your last few brain cells.
I widen my eyes and every muscle in my body squeezes so tight it burns. What the fuck did she just say? Before I know what I'm doing, I sweep her up into my arms and carry her to the side of the pool. Cannonball or washing machine? Her eyes widen.
What?
"Cannonball it is," I shout out, and I throw her into the pool, hearing her scream as her entire body hits the water and she completely submerges. I storm out of the gym without looking back. Hope the swim teacher knows how to swim. I dig my keys out of my pocket and head for my truck. Shit for brains? Blink too hard? She's got a nasty mouth on her and an answer for everything. Does she ever shut up? I climb into the truck, slamming the door. Damn it, I growl. What a fucking... But I stop myself, breathing hard. I'm so damn angry, I almost wish we had a gig tonight or a practice. I want to take what I'm feeling out on something. I hear a snort next to me, and I suddenly remember Dane is with me.
I told you,
he says. She looked kind of cold. I bet she feels good when she warms up, though. I couldn't care less. I stick the key in the ignition, yank the shifter to drive, and lay on the gas. Yeah, it looks like it, Dane comments dryly.
Chapter 6. Ryan. Dear Ryan, what do you think of this line to replace the ending of the chorus for Titan? You know, that song I sent you last time? Don't hold your breath, because you weren't first. Someone had to build the stairs that you climb. I was at the warehouse last night, and it just popped into my head. I think it fits the song a lot better, and with the beat, I think I'll like the way it's going to come out. Thoughts? And yeah, before you give me shit, I was at a party last night, sitting by myself and writing music. So what? I think it helps my street cred, to be honest. You know, the quiet loner, the mysterious hot rebel, something like that, maybe? Whatever. Fuck it. You know I don't like people. Anyway, you asked me my favorite place in your last letter. The warehouse is one of them. During the day, when no one is there, you can hear the pigeons flapping through the rafters, and you can take in all the graffiti without everyone around. Some of it's pretty incredible. But I guess my absolute favorite place, other than you, of course, is my house. I know. My dad is there, so why would I want to be? But actually, after my dad and sister have gone to sleep at night, when everything is dark, I crawl out my window and up to the roof. There's a little hidden valley between the ridges where I sit back against the chimney, sometimes for hours, digging around my phone, taking in the view, or sometimes I write you. I love it up there. I can see the tops of the trees, blowing in the night wind, the glow of the street lamps and stars, the sound of leaves rustling. I guess it makes me feel like anything is possible. The world isn't always what's right in front of you, you know? It's below, it's above, it's out there somewhere. Every burn of every light inside every house I see when I look down from the rooftop has a story. Sometimes we just need to change our perspective. And when I look down at everything, I remember that there's more out there than just what's going on in my house. The bullshit with my dad, school, my future. I look at all those full houses and I remember I'm just one of many. It's not to say we're not special or important, but it's comforting, I guess. You don't feel so alone. Misha. I hold his letter in my hand, the last one he sent me in February before he stopped writing, and stare at the handwriting probably only I can read. The rough strokes and abrupt marks crossing the T's and dotting the I's, and the way he never puts the appropriate amount of space between words, so his sentences end up looking like one big long hashtag. Amusement creeps up. I've never had a problem reading his writing, though. I grew up with it, after all. So many times I've read this letter, looking for clues, any clues, to figure out why he stopped writing after this. There's no hint that this was a goodbye, no indication that he was going to be any busier than usual or that he'd gotten bored or tired of me. The emptiness is getting bigger and wider and deeper, and I sit on my bed, happy song playing from my iPod, and study his words that always put the perfect light on anything. I'm not ready to start my day. Why don't I want to get up or even muster the energy to worry about what I'm going to wear? He's the only thing I look forward to, the only reason I rush home from school, so I can see if there's mail for me. I look up and stare at the words I wrote on my chalk wall last night. Alone. Empty. Fraud. Mason's words are in my head now, not Misha's. Ryan! My mom calls and knocks on my bedroom door. Are you up? My shoulders fall a bit, and I force myself to answer. Yeah, I'm not entirely lying. I am awake and sitting up in bed, cross-legged and reading. But as I hear her steps retreat back down the hallway and the stairs, I glance at the clock and see that I've procrastinated long enough. Folding the letter back up, I slip it into the white envelope and stick it in my bedside drawer. The rest of Misha's letters are under my bed, every single one close, in case I need them. Standing up, I make my bed and pack my school bag before walking to my closet and snatching out a pair of white shorts and a black top. I may have already worn that outfit this week, I'm not sure. I suddenly don't care. Once dressed, I head for the bathroom to do my hair and makeup since I already showered after swim lessons last night. I can't believe that asshole threw me in the pool. It was my turn to stand up to him, and I was doing a damn good job. But just like a guy, when he can't win with wit, he uses brawn. Slow clap for Mason. He may have had the last word, but he'd had to step up his game to do it. I feel an ounce of pride and smile as I enter the bathroom. I straighten my hair, getting rid of my bedhead, and begin applying my makeup, getting rid of the dark circles I have from staying up too late doing homework last night. I also add some blush to make me look healthy and happy. Someone walks in and tosses something in front of me. I look down and see my black envelope addressed to Misha. I pick it up. It's the letter I wrote him a few days ago. I can tell because it has the stamps with the planets on them I just bought at the post office last week. I look over at my sister, seeing her hair up in a messy bun and that she's wearing a summer dress with my black flats she didn't ask if she could borrow. I frown. Why do you have my letter? I took it out of the mailbox when I left for class the other day. Why? Because he hasn't written you in months, she snips. You need to let it go. Anger boils under my skin as I watch her twist toward the mirror and mess with her bun. Tell me again how that's any of your business, I snap, and I don't care if our mom hears. Ryan, it's pathetic, she says, looking at me like I'm a child. You look like you're chasing him. When he gets his shit together, he can find you. I throw down the letter and grab my lipstick, facing the mirror again. He's not my boyfriend who needs to check in, and I don't have to explain myself to you. Don't touch my mail again. Fine. She turns and walks for the door, but stops and turns her head to look at me. Oh, and Mom's waiting for you at the kitchen table. She saw your essay score online. She walks out, and I close my eyes, entertaining the idea of taking a cue from Mason for a wonderful split second. Cannonball or washing machine, Carson? Maybe a haircut? I walk out of my house and pass my Jeep, holding the strap of my school bag over my shoulder as I carry my letter to Misha back to the mailbox. I stick it inside and raise the flag so the mail carrier knows to pick it up. But then my eyes fall to the trash cans next to the mailbox, and I pause. You look like you're chasing him. It's pathetic. Pathetic. I swallow the bitter lump in my throat. Maybe she's right. Maybe I'm not a priority anymore. Maybe he got a girlfriend and she made him stop writing me. Maybe he got bored. His letters have been slowing down over the past couple of years, after all. I didn't mind because I also got busier in school, but still. Misha never wrote me as much as I wrote him. I'd never really thought about that until now. I snatch the letter out of the mailbox, crumple it up in my fists, and toss it on top of the pile in the garbage can. Screw him. I charge back toward my Jeep, my heart starting to race as the fresh dew on the grass wets my feet through my sandals. But then I stop, feeling a wave of loss wash over me. No, it's not pathetic. Misha wouldn't want me to stop writing him. He made me promise. I need you. You know that, right? He'd said. Tell me we'll always have this. Tell me you won't stop. That was in one of his rare letters where I got a glimpse of everything he keeps hidden. He'd seemed afraid and vulnerable, and so I promised him. Why would I ever stop? I never want to lose him. Misha. I swing around and jog back to the garbage can, digging the crumpled envelope out and straightening it again. I flatten it as much as I can and stick it back in the mailbox, shutting the lid. Without giving myself time to dwell on it, I hop in my car and drive to school. It's almost May, and even though it's a bit chilly, I brave it in my shorts and thin blouse, knowing the afternoon will be warmer. With 10 minutes to spare, I park in the lot, seeing crowds of students milling about as I walk up the sidewalk to the front entrance. Music plays from phones, people text, and I feel an arm snake around me, a familiar scent hitting my nose. 10 wears Jean-Paul Gaultier cologne every day, and I love it. It makes my stomach somersault. What's this? He asks, lifting up my right hand. I look down, seeing blue paint on my index finger and a little under my nail. Shit. I pull my hand away, my heart picking up pace. It's nothing. My mom is painting the bathroom, and I helped, I tell him. Curling my fingers into a fist, I hide my finger under the strap of my bag. I guess I need to wash in the shower a lot better at night. Look. He gestures to my right. I turn my head, seeing people circle around the lawn, and we both drift over to the edge of the sidewalk, reading the huge message in big, silver letters spray-painted on the grass. Lila got lost, got her salad tossed, in the men's locker room last night. Someone was in awe, fucking her raw. But who could it be? It wasn't JD. Oh, shit, Ten whispers, surprise heavy in his voice. I stare at the words on the lawn, my mouth going dry with a sudden urge to laugh. Okay? Who the hell? Students crowd around, gasping and laughing, some taking pictures, while Ten and I back away. That's the first time he ever got personal by naming names, Ten says. Who? Punk, he answers as if I should know. Now we know it's someone who goes to school here, someone who knows us. I groan inwardly. Yeah, but Punk always signs their messages. This is getting out of hand. I hear a noise and look up to see one of the janitors rolling a pressure washer outside and trying to maneuver it down the stairs. Let's go, I tell Ten. We walk into school and pass groups of students surrounding more messages on the walls, these ones signed. You kissed my hair while sticking me in the heart, but your house will break before I fall apart. Punk. I see a couple of girls take out pens and add more under the lines, dissing old boyfriends and writing things like, "Yeah, Jake." I hold back my laugh. "This is killing me," Ten exclaims as we make our way to our lockers. "I want to know who Punk is, and I want in." I snort. "Leave it to Ten. Of course, Lila is our friend, but Ten knows as well as I do that what's written on the lawn isn't a lie, and I'm sure he's excited to see the showdown with JD. I've got to hunt that bitch down and find out who she was in the locker room with, Ten says as he stops in front of his locker. I keep walking, calling over my shoulder. See you at lunch. I'm sure no one will discover whom Lila was messing around with last night. She probably won't even admit it's true. Coming up in front of my new locker, I key in the combination and open it, glancing to my left and noticing another janitor scrubbing away another message on the wall. He's erased the first few words already, but I know what it says. You loved me, we were besties, I lent you my eyeshadow. But someday all you'll be is someone I used to know. Punk. And underneath is a collage of ripped-out yearbook pictures from last year, showing sports teams and groups of students smiling at rallies and games, hugging and laughing with each other. I hang up my bag in my locker and take out the travel-sized nail polish remover from the shelf. Glancing around to make sure no one is looking, I walk over and hold it in front of Mr. Thompson, the janitor. Nail polish remover will take off anything, I suggest, seeing his face sweaty and red from the exertion of scrubbing so hard. He pinches his eyebrows together, probably taken aback by my being nice for once. Not that I've ever talked to him, but I may have missed the trash can a few times when tossing away my Starbucks cups. But he accepts the bottle, nodding in thanks. Luckily, nothing used to write on the walls is permanent, but it's still a hassle for the cleaning staff. Not that I care, but... I turn to go back to my locker. But my eyes instantly lock with Mason's, and I pause. He's leaning against the lockers across the hall, watching me with his arms crossed over his chest and a curious expression in his eyes. Has he been there the whole time? I force myself to ignore him and start grabbing my books out of my locker for my first class. There you are. I turn and see Lila, looking a little worse for wear. There's sweat on her brow, and her cheeks are flushed. I hear her phone buzzing. What happened to your other locker? She asks. I raise my eyebrows at her. Is she really going to act like there's not a big flaming slap to her face on the school's front lawn right now? Okay. Someone broke into it, I answer, turning back to my locker. Was it you? After my black BB top? She tosses me a dirty look. Like it would fit. I'm softballs and you're baseballs, babe. I hold back my eye roll as I stuff what I need in my bag, making sure I have my water bottle. I cast a quick glance behind me and see that Mason is gone. Lila's phone keeps buzzing, and I don't know if it's Facebook notifications or JD burning her up, but I really don't care. Some girls pass by, covering their mouths with their hands, and Lila shoots them a scowl. "Bite me, bitches," she growls. And they look away, carrying their smirks with them as they walk down the hall. Manny Cortez comes up behind her and tries to open his locker, but she turns around, facing both of us. Well, 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 maybe it was Manny who broke into your locker. Did you need some lipstick to go with that eyeliner? I see his expression harden as he keeps his back to her and doesn't respond. Nah, I step in, shutting my locker. Two different color palettes. I'm a mountain sunset, he's a smoky night. Lila laughs, but then she stops when we hear a yell. Heads up! We both dart our eyes upward and see a football flying down, coming straight for us. We scurry back, but there's no need. The ball slams into the left side of Manny's head, and he's knocked to his right, his hand immediately shooting to cover his ear as he winces in pain. Oh, shit! Trey runs up to us, laughing. Sorry, dude. I honestly didn't mean it. This time, he adds. I watch as Manny breathes hard, his black eyebrows wrinkled up in pain. He brings his hand away from his ear, and I see blood. My eyes go wide, and I suck in a breath. Oh my god, is that coming from his ear or out of it? Before I can find out, though, Manny slams his locker door shut and charges off, disappearing into the bathroom as the bell sounds off. Nice going, asshole, I scold. Hey, it was an accident. I see him cast a look at Lila, and then I see JD pop up behind him as all the students hurry to class. Get in class, JD tells Lila, his jaw flexing. Excuse me? You heard me. I'll finish talking to you later. She stands there, looking angry, but I don't stick around to watch the outcome. Walking past them, I head to Art, but I don't see Mason in his seat. And by the time the bell rings, he's still not there. I just saw him in the hall. How does he get to just come and go as he likes and skip classes? Luckily, though, Trey isn't crashing class either, so I make it through the entire period getting work on Misha's cover done and being left entirely alone. Even Manny is missing, probably having gone to the nurse to get his ear checked. I hope he's okay. That had to hurt. After class ends, I make my way to English, weaving through students as I slip into the classroom. Mason is sitting in his seat, and I pause, taken aback. Jesus, what does he do? Put in appearances whenever he feels like it? No books again, no visible pencil, and looks like he just showed up because he has nothing better to do. Isn't he worried about graduating? All right, take your questionnaires and go set the rest of your things down, Mr. Foster instructs as we file into the room and he passes out papers. And don't forget to take a pencil. Once I call your names, you can pair up, take your things to the library, and begin working. Oh, that's right, it's research day. Once in a while, Foster sends us to the library to let us work on our skills. He pairs us up, hands us a worksheet of information to find, and then we're on our own for the whole period. It's a reason to get out of class. I never complain. Lane, Rodney, and Cooper, Foster calls from his roster. Three students stand up, take their materials, and leave the room. Jess, Carmen, and Riley. He keeps going, one group after another, as the room slowly empties, and my nerves start to turn anxious when I realize there's only a handful of people left, including Mason and me. Please, not him. But Foster calls the next group. Ryan, JD, and Trey. I let out a breath of relief. Hell yeah, JD boasts, and I see him swipe a high five at Trey next to him. I start to stand up, taking what I need. And last two, Foster announces, Lila and Mason. I falter for only a moment and then swing my bag over my shoulder, hurrying out of the classroom. Lila and Mason, great. She won't be able to control herself. I step out of the classroom, hardening my expression. Why do I even care? I don't like him. I don't give a damn if she flirts with him, which she'll definitely do, so let her have at it. Fine. She's JD's problem anyway. And it doesn't matter. Someone else already has my heart, and Mason Laurent isn't him. He'll never be Misha. My parents are out of town in a couple weeks. Trey jogs up to me and places his hand on my waist as we walk. I'm having a party, and I want you there. Yeah, the pool's heated, JD adds behind us. I look back, seeing Lila and Mason following us, Mason's eyes on me. Yeah, I know, I tell JD. I've been in it, remember? Great, Trey chimes back in. So, bring a swimsuit. Or don't. Either way. Heat blankets my back, and I suddenly feel surrounded. I cast a quick glance back again, and I see Mason looking away as Lila chats about something. But then he must sense me looking, because he meets my eyes again. Trey follows my gaze, noticing my attention is not on him. Before I even realize my mistake, he whips around and grabs Mason by the collar, throwing him into the lockers. Hey!
he says in an overly friendly voice. I don't think we've met. I'm Trey Burrows. You're Mason Laurent. JD, Lila, and I stand and watch as Mason remains still, simply staring at Trey. Now that that's over, Trey goes on, closing in and getting in his face, let's get a few things straight. What the hell are you doing? I inch closer. Yeah, Trey, come on. JD speaks up. He's a good guy. But Trey just holds up his hands. Relax. We're just having a talk. I promise. I look down and see Mason's fingers curl into fists, but he doesn't move as Trey and he stand eye to eye. Now, you've been having a little fun with my girl in class, and I also hear you were hassling her in the parking lot yesterday, Trey states. Whatever bullshit you've got going on, stops now. Leave her alone. Mason's gaze flickers to me, and a weight hits me in the chest. His eyes look sharp and angry at first, but that seems to change to disappointment, along with something else. Sadness, maybe? What's going on in his head? Why is he looking at me like that? Don't look at her, Trey growls, getting in Mason's face. What's the matter? You can't speak? What's going on? We all turn to see Principal Burrows standing in the middle of the hallway, her black suit and burgundy blouse crisp and ironed. Trey stands up straight and backs off Mason. Nothing, Jillian. He mocks his stepmom and then looks back to Mason. We're cool, right? Mason's eyes are on the floor, and he doesn't speak. Where are you supposed to be? Burrows asks Trey. But I answer instead. Foster is sending us to the library to research. Then move. I nod, and we all quickly start walking down the hall. You two? I hear her say behind us, probably to Mason. Why didn't he do anything? Not that Trey's a small guy he could easily take, but I get the impression Mason has been in fights before. He's volatile and impulsive, so why did he hold back? We jog up the stairs and enter the library. All of the other students are already here, whispering, moving about, and gathering the materials they need. Some are on the computers and some are in the stacks. Our library consists of two floors and a nice view into the main level from the balcony up above. I dump my bag on a table toward the back and see Lila and Mason take seats two tables up. JD and Trey plop down in the seats at our table, and Trey puts his feet up. Yeah, not happening. You guys go to the computers and look up annotated bibliographies, I tell them. Print off some examples, and I'll go find some from secondary sources. I'm not doing this worksheet on my own. Trey heaves a sigh, and JD laughs to himself, both of them getting back up off their asses. I twist around and head back to the nonfiction section. The shelves loom high, and I skirt around a rolling ladder and turn left, diving farther into the back of the library, away from the tables of students and their hushed whispers. I reach out and graze my hand along the spines of the books as I pass. My mom's going to wonder why I haven't even started Fahrenheit 451. Not that I'll get into trouble, but she'll wonder what's been distracting me. You know, that kid? I hear someone say, and I jerk my head to look behind me. Mason approaches, and my heartbeat picks up pace. The one writing on the walls at night? He continues. We have something in common. I like to write on things, too. He stops in front of me and takes my hand. But you know that, right? My skin warms where he touches it, and I try to jerk my hand free, but he holds on tight. He likes to write on things, too? What? And then I remember the wall at the cove, my chalk wall in my room, my locker that first day. I jerk my hand harder, yanking it free. What? Did you find Trey a bit too big and scary, so you're going to take your fight to me instead now? He gives me a casual grin and snatches my hand again, pulling out a Sharpie from his pocket with his other hand. Let go. He sticks the marker in his mouth, bites off the cap, and flips the pen around, shoving it back inside the cap. But I thought you wanted my phone number, for the drive-in, remember? He looks down at me with an innocent expression on his face, and I don't know what he's doing, but I have to admit I'm kind of afraid to put up a fight this time. Throwing me into a pool when no one's around isn't that embarrassing, but I highly doubt he's going to give a shit that we're not alone right now if he deems it necessary to put me in my place again. I don't want his fucking number. He takes my left index finger and starts writing on the inside of it while I grind my teeth and glare at him. You know, I remember so much of what was in that diary, he muses as he writes. I can say whatever I want. I don't need proof. Not with them. He jerks his chin, indicating all the students sitting over in the table area that we can't see. I pull away again, but he tightens his hold. Don't worry. He smiles down at my finger as he sketches.
The velvety tip tickles my skin. I have no interest in tormenting you. Not like that, anyway. I just have one question. And then he stops drawing and looks up, peering at me. Who's Delilah? I freeze and stare at him, forgetting that he's holding my hand as the hair on my neck stands up. What?
You had her name doodled all over your notebook, he tells me. Who is she? Secret girlfriend? Secret shame?
He drops his eyes and continues writing.
A regret?
You read my notebook. You should already know.
I didn't read anything,
he retorts. I glare at him. He didn't read it, but...
I flipped the pages and saw her name on the inside cover, he explains. You think I give a shit about what goes on in your mind? I've got better things to do.
Then why are you asking if you don't care? I yank my hand away, growling under my breath. You're an asshole. I keep my voice low, even though I don't see anyone around. But before I can walk away, he places his hands on the bookshelves, locking me in.
You know I could have taken him and his friend in one breath just now. What was I waiting for?
He stares into my eyes, searching for something.
Maybe the same thing that Cortez kid waits for when your boyfriend's pushing him around, he says in a low voice, his lips inches from mine. Maybe for someone in their perky little ponytail.
He flips my hair.
And come fuck me short shorts to grow a dick and stand up to the asshole.
I knock his arm away, my stomach tight with anger, but he locks me in again, bearing down.
Was that what Delilah was waiting for too?
He presses.
Did she wait for you, and you never showed?
He grabs my hand and turns my finger, showing me what he wrote. I look down at the thick black letters written on the inside of my finger.
Shame. Don't worry. He says, I won't say anything. Your secrets are yours. You have to live with them.
And then he lifts my finger to his lips, making the shh sign. I pull my hand away and slam my hands into his chest, pushing him off.
The next time he lays a hand on me, I'll end him.
He warns, curling his lips in a smirk.
And then I'll take his prom date.
Chapter 7. Misha. I was getting a little lonely. Lila purrs, resting back in her seat with her arms folded over her chest and her legs crossed. You were gone so long. Lonely? I doubt she even knows the meaning of the word. Not that I have any opinion of a chick who messes around on her boyfriend. Unless the boyfriend is me or one of my friends. But I don't like her for other reasons. She's like Ryan on crack. At least my Ryan is still in there somewhere. I see it in how she's uncomfortable when that Cortez kid is bullied. I saw it this morning when she gave the janitor nail polish remover to help take off the graffiti. And I see it all over her room. The collages, the poetry. The lyrics I've sent her for review, the quotes and colors everywhere. That's the Ryan I know. But in 10 years, she could be Lila. Self-serving, false, and screwing anything to forget how much she hates herself. And everything I've always found incredible about her will be gone. I pull out my chair and sit down, knowing damn well I have no intention of doing this assignment. Misha Lair is as good as done with high school, so I'm not here for that.
Here.
She sits up, pushing some books toward me.
I dug up some primary resources so we can start on this questionnaire.
But before I can tell this chick she's on her own, I'm shoved forward from behind, a body slamming down on my back and an arm pressing into my neck. What the hell? I shoot out my arms to keep my head from hitting the table, and then I feel breaths in my ear.
Ryan!
I hear someone exclaim. I think it's Lila.
Don't move.
Ryan whispers in my ear, and I feel a sharp point digging into the back of my neck. I'd hate for this pen to slip. I shake with a shocked laugh. She didn't like being served back in the stacks, and now she's lost her mind. Excellent. I do exactly what she asks, even though my heart is racing and my groin is throbbing with heat. I feel the pen glide over my skin in long, slow strokes, and I'm actually amused. I know people are watching. Everyone is suddenly silent, even Lila. The pen digs deep, and I wince as I feel a sting.
She finishes and stands up, taking her weight off me and throwing down the pen. I feel her leave and I sit up straight. Everyone is looking at me and I see Ryan brush past my table with her bag on her shoulder, storming out of the library.
Are you okay?
Lila asks.
Yeah.
I nod and glance behind me, seeing JD smiling and shaking his head while Trey leans forward on the table and glares at me. She did that in front of him. Good girl. I turn back to my partner. What did she write? Lila rises from her seat and takes a look. I hear a snort.
Are you sure you want to know?
Great. I nod. She starts reading in slow syllables.
Needle, dick, douchebag, asshole.
I break into laughter. Awesome. Stuck-up Ryan Trevorrow is learning how to play in the mud, and I feel a little excitement course through my veins.
Do you want me to go get you some wet paper towels?
Lila puts a hand on her hip, hovering. But I just wave her off. Fuck it. Just leave it. What do I care?
Mason Laurent?
Someone calls. I sit there for a moment before I blink and look up, remembering that's my name. The librarian is holding the receiver of the phone at the circulation desk and looking around.
Yeah.
She follows my voice and meets my eyes, hanging up the phone.
The principal would like to see you. Take your things, just in case.
But I don't move. The principal? Heat floods my veins and I feel weighted to my seat. Why the hell does she want to see me? Does she know? My breathing quickens and I stand up, grabbing nothing because I brought nothing, and make my way toward the doors. I ignore the curious glances and snorts, probably because as I pass them, they can see the shit Ryan wrote on my neck. I should just leave. Walk out the front doors right now, but as I come up on her office, I find myself opening the doors, my resolve hardening. I haven't gotten everything I came here for yet. I'm not running away, so let's see what she has to say. If she knows, she knows. Or if she found out my records are fake, supplied by one of my cousin's shady connections. Mason Laurent is a name I made up, and I live in a dilapidated basement and sneak into the school to shower at night, then I'll deal with it. Either way, I'm not leaving. Not yet.